November 15th is the deadline for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to patch up the cybersecurity holes in the healthcare.gov website. The Government Accountability Office offers 22 technical recommendations to the agency. Those problems appear right as the website comes close to its first birthday. Raj Sharma is co-founder and CEO of the Sensio Consulting Group and my guest for Industry Chatter today. And Raj and his team are looking at ways to predict and fix longstanding problems with large federal IT projects like healthcare.gov. Raj, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're writing about five warning signs of a high-risk IT project. We'll dig into those in just a moment. What do you do for clients in the federal space, Raj?
Sure. Sensio Consulting Group is focused on really helping management and leadership strengthen both organizational and operational capabilities. So all the things that we hear about in terms of all the issues related to management, we're really helping, working with a lot of the senior leaders to help create operational efficiencies, operational excellence, so we can actually execute all the great important policies and missions of agencies.
So that management focus, I think, comes through well in the writing that you're doing about healthcare.gov, and really, I think, helps to frame this conversation, because a lot of people have examined any number of different IT projects that have not worked well in the federal government and examined what went wrong from a technology perspective and an implementation and execution perspective. You're focused more on the management side of that, and that's what I want to go through. The first point that you make in your warning signs is no alignment on problem or desired outcomes. And it strikes me this is kind of the crux of the technology versus solution problem, where people are deciding we need a piece of technology, a website or an application, and not we need to meet a citizen need in a certain way or fulfill part of our mission in a certain way. Am I on the right track there?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things we found in this report, and we had a hunch going in, that while the overall problems are being talked about, whether we're talking about healthcare.gov or others, the IT procurement problem, the issue is really more about management issues. It's bigger than procurement, and it starts a whole lot earlier than any acquisition process or procurement process. So in terms of what problem are we solving, that's a classic case. It happens in any environment, but especially we see there's a rush to move towards a solution. And we don't really take time to define what really is the problem. And it's really important to understand that because of the different stakeholders and the different parties that may be involved when you're talking about healthcare, for instance, or you're talking about the Secure Border Initiative and building a border, there's so many complex set of parties that play a role, whether they're directly working on a program or outside just affected by it, that even defining the problem is very difficult because each person may have a very different definition. And then agreeing to, once you define the problem, what does success mean? We don't have to get technical jargon about, you know, what's the outcome? What are the measures? Let's keep it simple. What's changed if we're successful, right? As a society or as having solved a problem, we need to keep it really simple. And does everyone agree what success means at the end of the day? And I think we're starting a lot of programs, a lot of these different cases. We're not taking time first to just get people aligned on what's the problem and what's the outcome. What are we trying to do?
You mentioned some of the more complex issues that the government's addressed, but I have seen this over the years in very simple issues. The one that I've cited on the show a number of times is a conversation I had with an agency person probably 2 or 3 years ago now, or longer than that, I suppose. They were talking about building a Facebook page for the agency. And I said, that's terrific. What are you going to do on the Facebook page?
Yep.
Well, we're going to be on Facebook. We're going to be able to communicate with people that way. Well, great. What are you going to communicate with them? And then there wasn't really at that point a very clear strategy about what information they were going to convey and how they were going to do it. That was a platform they wanted to be on. Yep. And so they were going to go and occupy that platform and not do what you're talking about, which is figure out what's the point of doing it in the first place.
Exactly. And that happens a lot of times. We have a solution in mind, right? We jump in, or a lot of times, especially in a politically driven environment, right? We know that there's a certain type of healthcare system we want to build. Or I'll go back to the Secure Border Initiative. We know that we want to build a border. What's the outcome? Are we looking to stem the flow of illegal immigrants into the country? Right? Is that the problem we're trying to solve? And is building a border the only way of doing that? So it goes back, you know, to there might be multiple ways of solving the same problem. I can give you many examples as we go.
Yeah. The second point of your five warning signs is weak leadership and governance. And you write, most senior leaders and program executives aren't around long enough to run large IT programs from beginning to end, and they often lack the management skills or authority necessary to make tough executive decisions. What you're writing, I agree with, and I think maybe I'd put the emphasis more on authority than the management skills being lacking just because of the risk-averse nature of federal agencies right now. Is that a fair assumption on my part, do you think?
Absolutely. And again, the typical process, I think we see this reflected. Right. There's many stakeholders. Something may be championed at the top of an agency, right? It's a presidential initiative. Mm-hmm. But before you know it, I think it goes back to the issue of us placing importance on management issues. You know, we'd spend a lot of time coming up with the policy, the plan, the legislation. But before you know it, you know, when it comes to actually implementing, we forget about the complexity of actually taking it to execution. So we pass it down 4, 5, 6 levels before you know it. And the person may very well be qualified, but you're absolutely right. Even if they're qualified, they're so buried deep in the organization that they lack the authority to actually get anything done. And go back to the issue of many stakeholders. You've got so many cooks. And the way we frame this issue is too many cooks, everyone's in charge. Mm-hmm. You really need top leadership and top leadership cover. I think Stan Soloway from Professional Services Council said this. You need not only top leadership, but you need cover from the absolute top to say, you know what, if we overrule somebody, if some key big honcho from some special interest group or somebody comes and we overrule them or we decide not to go along with whatever their recommendation is, we're gonna be covered. And that does not happen a lot of times. So you're absolutely right. The authority is very important, and we need to start at the top, and we'll talk about solutions later.
One of the issues that we saw in this area manifest itself in healthcare.gov was the disconnect too between the policy as it was written in law and the need for the agency to execute on that law. Nobody seemed in management to be sitting with the members of Congress that were writing the law, because there were cases where the stakeholders at HHS and CMS, from what sources have told me, would come to the IT team and say, okay, it has to do this. And they would say, well, that's not really going to work for here are the couple, 5, 10 reasons or whatever, that's not going to happen. Well, it has to work. And okay, well, we'll figure out, we'll try to make it work. And that led to a lot of the issues. So it strikes me that the further back, the earlier in the cycle that the management concepts are involved, the better off you're going to get a result on the back end.
I think you pointed to a really important issue that sometimes, you know, even when I talked about policy and execution, the disconnect there, but even when we're formulating policy, formulating legislation, we have to take the operational execution, what's possible, what technologies are available into account if we're actually going to drive informed, smart policy, right? But what happens, the political reality is we have a lot of ideas. We've made some promises, you know, whether it's to our electorate or some other constituencies, and we push forward without really taking account, we'll have other people figure it out. So now, not only is it that we've buried something down deep below to get implemented, we've also placed a lot of unrealistic expectations that are not even practical or possible. So then you have people scurrying trying to figure that out.
The third on your list of five warning signs, I'll just mention, and because of time, we'll talk about it another time. That's the check the box culture. And I think everybody's familiar with the compliance culture the way that it exists today. The fourth is that requirements are too prescriptive. And as we talked about before we went on the air, this came up at a discussion that I moderated today for ACT-IAC about agile development. And this is supposed to be one of the benefits of agile development is that you can make the requirements more broad to begin with. And because you're seeing progress in weekly or sometimes even daily chunks, you're able to shape those requirements as you go along. What I took away from this conversation today, though, is that the procurement process in government is not really set up yet to do that well and to do it on a very scalable or replicable basis. And that forces agencies sometimes into very prescriptive requirements so that they can, so that their procurement shops know how to buy it. Have you seen that in the work that you've done with government, with agencies?
Yeah, absolutely. We see this all the time in that, because it goes back to the risk-averse culture, that we believe that, you know, to avoid protests later on, to, or to avoid any other delays, if we can be very detailed about what we need, and then, of course, the contracting officers and others will go check through the requirements and be able to very objectively decide who's the kind of the best capability, best price, all of those set of things. But what it does is it takes away all flexibility. And also the other thing it does is it creates a barrier. And it's one of the things that we've talked about a lot. It creates a barrier to entry. And what we're doing is we're having an unintended consequence of limiting competition. That's probably the most severe, the two most severe issues related to prescriptive requirements. One is barrier to competition and barriers to innovation. Mm-hmm. So we're losing both of those. So we're having completely the opposite effect of what we want out of a well-done procurement.
The fifth on your list of warning signs is a slow procurement process and closed markets. And we're going to put a link to this work at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon so that folks can read it whenever they want. Raj Sharma is my guest. He's co-founder and CEO of the Sensio Consulting Group. The first one on your list of six solutions is establishing clear lines of authority and accountability. Knowing who's in charge provides lots of incentive to everybody involved in a project, I imagine.
Absolutely. One thing I'll just say about the overall recommendations is that we try to come up with recommendations that can be practical and implemented by any program, as opposed to waiting for some major reform legislation to come out of the hill, because we ultimately don't believe that that's the way you're going to actually see large change. So with that in mind, the first recommendation, yes, absolutely. I think it's really having a senior enough person, as we talked about, that there's a lot of trust in from the agency leadership all the way up to the secretary. That's really important, and especially on key missions and key programs. And some of the skill sets that we emphasize, it's not just the management skills, but in addition to that, it's, and even maybe more important, are communication and relationship skills. Because again, if you think about, you know, all the people and all the key leaders that you have to engage in Congress and others, and depending on the program, it's you really have to be on your game when you know, being able to really build a trust and influence others. And we believe that that's really one of the keys. And I know that's one of the things when we met with Richard Spires during this study, and we talked about in the successes we've seen, is if you can get that type of leader in. The second thing I'll just quickly mention is stakeholders. It's really important to systematically identify all the people, all the leaders, all the groups that may impact one way or another the program, and get them engaged right at the outset. That's how we really drive a process when we get involved. And that's so critical, because you want people to feel that they're involved as part of the solution, not just being handed some report later on and saying, hey, can you rubber stamp this for me, please?
You kind of put some emphasis on all there. Is it something you've seen on a regular basis that maybe some of the stakeholders are identified and involved in the process, but not everybody that's going to have to deal with the end result on the project?
Yeah, I think it because it is honestly a time. It's an intensive process. We've gone through, for instance, a program at EPA recently where we engaged hundreds of people across the agency. And it's a time-intensive process, so it does need a recognition from the leadership that the time you spend now is going to save you so much time later on in terms of not trying to sell this and market this. So that, and so then we think there's sometimes there's some short-sightedness to just kind of move quickly past and not really listen and pay attention.
The second solution you offer is developing a simple needs and outcomes statement instead of voluminous RFPs. And I love the way you write this. Instead of Bible-sized documents to describe requirements, programs should focus on clearly defining need and success measures or outcomes. And I've seen that word outcomes so much lately with regard to all kinds of government projects. Yeah. Yeah, all kinds of stuff, not just IT. And I've seen especially a focus on outcomes and not outputs. X number of people that have gone through a training project, that's not the point. The point is, do they now have skills they didn't have before? That kind of thing. What do you think is driving that emphasis on outcomes? Is it just a budget situation, or is there something else behind that, do you think?
I think ultimately it goes back to what does success mean, right? And so I'll give you an example of continuous improvement programs, for instance. One time I had somebody from, I won't say which part of the Department of Defense, come and tell me, well, we've trained so many black belts and we now have 150 black belts across this organization. I said, great. What indicators, what performance indicators have you moved? As a result, have you cut costs? Mm-hmm. Are you delivering more program outcomes in terms of, are you affecting more people? Are you maybe, have you cut cycle time, right? So ultimately outputs are a means to an end. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's more and more critical that we even think about when we're talking about, you know, looking at different needs and measuring which solution we should go with, we shouldn't worry about what's the rate per hour, for instance, of a consultant. Who cares? How much outcome can they deliver at the lowest cost? Mm-hmm. That's what I care about. If somebody came to me and said, I'm running a program at $10,000 and somebody's going to charge me $10,000 an hour and somehow they'll get this done in 2 hours versus somebody that's going to give me 10,000 hours at a lowest rate and maybe they'll charge me or a lot more hours, who cares, mm-hmm. right? And it's the outcome that we need to get to.
Raj Sharma of the Sensio Consulting Group, my guest on Industry Chatter today. The third on your list of six solutions is engaging the market early. That's one that we've covered at length on this program, especially in efforts that the Office of Federal Procurement Policy has made under its last several leaders. The fourth is developing a cost-to-outcome ROI-focused program IT strategy. And I am seeing a lot more emphasis on ROI in all kinds of programs than I think I've ever seen before, Raj. The fifth is encouraging smart risk-taking. And I think that I'm encouraged by what the focus that I've seen on risk management in government, especially in IT projects, but in other programs too, because it implies to me that finally, stakeholders are breaking out of this total risk aversion that we've seen for the last couple of years and recognizing if they're going to do innovative things, they're going to have to take some risks in an educated way, in a very measured way, but they're going to have to take some risks and be able, if they're going to be able to do some of these innovative things.
Absolutely. I think it's dangerous to have one-sided risk management, as mm-hmm. we've kind of talked about. So it's important to balance the risk and think about, one, encourage as a culture, and then look at different ways of doing it, because avoiding failure at any cost is not really the best way to go, because ultimately it costs us a lot. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of examples we have in the report, but in terms of encouraging smart risk-taking, you know, we've seen a number of examples where we need to just be upfront with the public, where we, for instance, talked to the CIO of Palo Alto, and they were trying to roll out a new website for months and or years. And there was this avoidance of, oh, do we really have everything right? The new CIO came in, and he and Jonathan Reichenthal, and he basically just wrote on it, it's a beta test, and let everybody know. And all of a sudden, they launched this thing. They had tons of feedback, and it improved the overall site. So they took the small risk mm-hmm. of maybe some people won't like it, but if we let everyone know what's going on, what we're trying to test, it was a way to really beta test the site. And those are the types of things we need to encourage more. Break down problems into their finer points so we can actually iteratively test them. Use minimum viable product philosophy, which we talk about in the report, and we'd encourage the government to take a look at that as well.
What's the basic concept behind that, the thumbnail behind the minimum viable product concept?
So it's basically, think about separating wants versus needs.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody wants something. What do we really need? What is the most basic? And that's, it goes back to really skimming down our requirements. We really need to prioritize. Not every requirement is important. What's a need? And even among those needs, what's the most basic need we need to fill?
Mm-hmm.
And let's start with that. And then we can build on that. And that's the whole philosophy behind MVP, as it's called.
The sixth of your recommendations is reducing burdensome requirements and speeding up the procurement process. And that's another one that has gotten a lot of time and attention. And as we're almost out of time, Raj, is it your sense that all six of these recommendations are necessary for a program to be successful? Or can a program make it with improvements in just a couple of these areas? Certainly they're all important, but are they all absolutely necessary? Or have you seen successes where there might be some weaknesses in a couple of these?
We would say the first two are the most important. Because if you can't get the right leadership and accountability down, and you can get people to agree on what the problem is and how we're trying to solve it, those are the first two most important ones. And then you can get things aligned better and you can move towards a better solution. Definitely we see, procurements that are speeding up right now. And so it's encouraging. I think people are trying out. The White House just issued a report on innovative procurement approaches.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different methods. So you don't have to implement all of them. But what we would encourage everyone is not to wait for some bill, some mandate, and really start taking each one of these things and seeing how can we apply them within their program, within our program.